When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless... you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda White, and I'm very excited because I'm here with Dr. Tracy Dalgleish, who is here to talk about a lot of things, but especially her new book, You, Your Husband, and His Mother. I'm so excited to get into it.
Thank you for having me here, Amanda. I have greatly appreciated the mission that you have been on to help bring the nuance back into our conversations. And it's just so needed. I came across a Reddit post yesterday around in-laws and someone saying, my in-laws keep coming over. Do I have to cut them out? And it went from this kind of all of this to nothing. And I'm thinking, oh, how do we live more in the gray area? Let's find that there because it's so important. So let me just pause to say I'm grateful that you're on this mission to support more people.
Thank you. One of the things I love about your books is you specifically say we kind of act like there's a villain and a victim in these in-law dynamics, husband, daughter-in-law, mother dynamics. And I love that most of your book is talking about how there is a third option. There is another way that we can do it. Before we get into that, what was the inspiration of this book?
This came from almost 20 years of sitting across from couples and hearing repeatedly, we want to get on the same page. We want to communicate better, feel connected. And every couple desires a healthier relationship with in-laws. They want, or in-laws and extended family in general. It really was this continued bumping up against not having a resource to give the couples I was working with. And then, of course, with the addition of the online work that I started doing in 2018, more and more people kept saying, I don't have support for this and I don't know how to navigate it. And when I launched the book title, You, Your Husband, and His Mother, many people came to me saying, why didn't you title it You, Your Husband, and Her Mother?
Yeah.
Or, and My Mother. And the reason for that really is, well, I mean, first, as we'll talk about, the system in this book is built for any extended family member.
Yeah.
You can use it if it's your own mom, if it's a father-in-law, your sister-in-law. We talk about triangles and that just shows up in so many of our relationships. But the piece here that I've seen clinically and also through the research that has been done on in-law relationships, there's a higher percentage of conflict between mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. And we can get into the specifics around that. But that was really the, we need a resource. We need to support families. And oh my goodness, Amanda, we as women today are so different than women 40, 50, 60 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that right there is where tension starts to stir up.
Totally, totally. Why do you think it is that daughter-in-law, mother-in-law is, it sounds like, more of a challenging dynamic sometimes than other dynamics?
I think in some ways it starts even from what a mother-in-law experienced when she became a daughter-in-law. you know, we think about 40 years ago, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe this woman didn't have a voice. Mm-hmm. Maybe in her marriage, she wasn't working as much as we are working today. Or this idea of dividing invisible, visible labor and mental load wasn't even part of the equation. Or to even act, I think this is an important piece, to even act from a place of our values.
Yeah.
Where I hear a lot of boomers will talk about, and baby boomers, the generation X after them, will talk about morality. Not everybody, but this is something that shows up where families back then would pack up the newborn and the toddler and the dog and put all the Christmas gifts in the car and drive the 5 hours through the snowstorm because, and I'm using quotation marks, that's just what you do. That's what families do. And I think for so many people today, we're saying that's not what works for us. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of this first point of contention. But then this idea that comes up is a mother-in-law. So a mother then has a special bond with her son. I talk about that bond in the book. It's so important that we see that. But then it's confusing because he stops reaching out to her. He stops turning to her. He starts to say no to her. And that maybe that kind of relationship didn't exist before. And as a parent, you're then asking, well, why? Mm-hmm. And what do? We look to blame and to place that on somebody else, which is where daughters-in-law end up becoming scapegoated.
Yep.
They're labeled as the bad ones. They're labeled as the ones causing all the problems in the family when she's just the first person to name something. She's not bad.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's such a good point too about as we are changing so much, as we are looking at these relationships differently. Like I loved what you said about morality because I think that's such a big issue I see sort of like across the board these days. Like anytime we're kind of stuck in one of these triangles or I think we're struggling with communication, a lot of times what's going on is that morality of you're good or bad, this is right or wrong, right? Is that all or nothing thinking? And I think coming back to someone can say something without you needing to agree, right? You can listen to them. Like that to me, it just feels like the communication really gets off the rails whenever we're walking into a conversation with, which so many of us do, which we could talk about, you know, like across the world, politically, social media, all of this I think has gotten worse, where everything has become so urgent and moral that people are like losing the ability to just be present in the conversation and hear what someone is saying.
I always say to people, there are three experiences going on. Mm-hmm. What's happening inside of you, that's the self. What's happening inside of somebody else, that's the other.
Yeah.
And then your reaction to them.
Yeah.
When we slow things down, when we get more curious and we bring more awareness and reflective abilities to this, we can then start to ask ourselves, what's showing up for me? Mm-hmm. What is the other person experiencing and what's their position? And then how am I reacting to that? And I think of this one daughter-in-law I worked with, and this is where this conversation is so nuanced and complex. And that's why writing this book, I really wanted to make sure I captured all of this. So I walk people through the family dynamics in chapter two. I walk people through your own stuff that you show up with in this relationship and your partner shows up with. And then that's in chapter three. In chapter four, it's the communication because that's the couple dynamic that is also part of this. But I think of this daughter-in-law I worked with, one of my clients, and she grew up in a household where her emotions were, I mean, I wouldn't say neglected, but they were ignored. Mm-hmm. They were minimized, put to the side. She would come home from school and, you know, as preteens, teenagers do, she doesn't want to talk about her day, but her mother would be there waiting for her. Tell me about your day. What happened? And if she said, Mom, fine, I just want to go to my room, as teens do, her mother would say, stop being so selfish. Why are you always making this about yourself? And can't you just see that I'm your mother and I want to connect with you, and really making it about herself? And so then her mother-in-law comes along and she experiences her mother-in-law as being intrusive because she's asking, how's your work? What's new for you? How are things going with the babies, et cetera, et cetera? These really well-intentioned questions. But because of the lens she had, she was viewing her mother-in-law in that way. Mm. And we really had to kind of piece this apart of, you know, what could this person be showing up with? And also then, what are you showing up with in this relationship?
I love that you gave that example because I would imagine when someone hears about your book if they're stuck in sort of like, we're over-therapizing, therapy speak is bad, they may be like, oh, great, another book written about how your mother-in-law is terrible and boundaries will solve everything. So I love how in the book too, you go into examples of when is it your job to look at your stuff and how am I contributing to this dynamic? Because I think both of those things have to work. And obviously a lot of my work these days has been like, where have we overcorrected? And I think your book does such a good job of, it would be so easy to just blame mother-in-laws and just say that like they are 100% the problem. Boundaries will solve everything, but you really go into this framework, which I want you to get into, of we're all in this dynamic together.
And also recognizing, and I think this is key for anyone who's going to become a mother-in-law or anyone who currently is and listening, is that this book is not out to blame and shame anybody.
Yeah.
It's about to deepen understanding and to build relationships that work for everybody. And I do have a section in the back that talks about becoming the mother-in-law you want to be. But it is interesting though, because then I hear these stories and I've heard so many stories and there's so many commonalities in it. And that's really what this book is about, is bringing together this real life struggle. And also too, if you have a good relationship with your mother-in-law, read this book, have conversations about what the two of you are doing together that's making this work, because that's going to help seal that bond.
Yeah.
But I think of even a 15-year-old who entered a family and she never felt accepted. Her partner's mother ignored her and then they stayed together. Yeah. And then this experience of her now mother-in-law never taking interest in her. And that's painful.
Yeah.
And we as women, as mothers or parents, we can start this work so early. Even something like, and I shared this on my social media recently, where my son came to me. And again, this is just why I just love your podcast, Nuance is Needed. Like, you know, it's like so. But when I posted this, I had people say, I don't think you should always be doing this. And it's the, but I didn't say I was always doing this. So here's the example. My son comes to me one night. We're supposed to watch a movie together. And he says, you know, Mom, my friends are at the park. I really want to play with them. And I say, yeah, bud, I totally get it. Go ahead. You know, let's make sure we schedule our time together. So we reschedule. And it's in this moment as a mother that I am modeling to him, you are a separate person than me. You are allowed to have your own identity and I have my own identity. I will not guilt you for having your needs, and your needs matter to me, and you can come to me even when you're coming to me with something hard. And that is what I think so many, particularly men, miss when they were growing up. Because of family systems, because of the dynamic, because of who they were as a person, this kind of testing out with their mom. How do I remain in relationship with you while still having my own identity?
Yes. Oh, I love that. I love that. Because, yeah, I mean, I guess people who don't listen to my podcast, obviously that's not people who are listening, but I have gotten people who I think believe when I say things like annoyance is the price you pay for community, or I talk about how not everything is about you. I think that also that can make people assume that I'm like anti-estrangement, or I like think that everyone should just get along, which is absolutely not the case. So I love that example, because I think the big thing that you come back to, I talk to, you know, Whitney Goodman on Calling Home about this a lot, is that a lot of what is the issue, I think, with families is there are these like expectations that are not talked about. And there is this belief that parents are superior, or parents like have ownership of the kids. And there is this assumption that you owe me for raising you. And I am so grateful now for my parents, who actually really did do a good job of modeling this, of they help me so much. They're so wonderful and supportive, and they will babysit when they can and do all kinds of things, but they're very honest about, you know, like my parents help with weekends and things like that. But they were like, we would resent you if we were your daycare. And I don't think it would be good for our relationship. And like, that's absolutely true. And it's acknowledging what's going on. It's being honest. They help, and they also have their own lives. And as a result, I can do that too. I don't have these like expectations on me that I always have to inconvenience myself, either. And Sam and I talk about this on the podcast too, of because she's single and she doesn't have children and I'm married and I do have kids, so our lives look a little different. And we kind of talk about how relationships cannot always be 50-50. Sometimes someone needs to give more while the other person can't. And it's not that she cares about our relationship more than me because she would drive to visit me more. It was within the parameters of the time we had available. And I think that is so important with in-laws and especially parents who are in this like season of life with kids where it's like you talked about in the beginning, right? Like coming to them maybe sometimes because you will then be able to spend more time together. And isn't that what we want?
It is this kind of looking at the common goal. But then I think sometimes because of really difficult feelings, and that can come from all kinds of different places, these outdated coping mechanisms. And when I say that, I'm talking about the, like even the 10, and I say toxic intentionally in the book, but the 10 unhelpful family dynamics that I talk about. We think about denial, rigidity, control, parentification, all of those things that show up as these coping mechanisms to keep families close that really come from insecurity and fear of insignificance, fear of loss, fear of aloneness and loneliness. And one of the biggest trends, and I love that you've brought in yours and Sam's relationship because it is even this element where we have to come to the table and talk about what works for me, what works for you, and how do we make this feel good for both of us. We do that in all of our relationships. But Amanda, the biggest pinpoint where I see couples struggle, you know what I'm going to say?
Yeah.
Babies.
Yeah.
The first baby.
Yeah.
Because, and I see this on Reddit. I see it on social media. I see grandparents just so, so excited to jump into this role. And I get it. I totally get it. And it's difficult though, because we lose then the ability to see the whole picture. And I have had story after story, this feeling, and truly I choke up in sessions where these new mothers come to me and they say, I felt invisible. I was pushed to the side. I catered to my mother or mother-in-law after having a baby, and it was all about baby. They text me saying, send more pictures. They don't text me saying, how's mama doing today? And part of that struggle really is sitting down before having a child, sitting down before any big transition as a couple, and saying, what are your hopes and wishes for this time? And if someone says, if grandparent-to-be says, we just want to be supportive, that's a chance to say, well, you know, support looks different for everybody. Tell me what that means to you. And if they say, well, I will come and stay in your house for 2 weeks after you deliver. Okay, great. Now we're starting to understand what support looks like for them. Then you can start talking about, we would love support from you, and support for us actually looks like this.
Yeah.
Because you get ahead of it.
Yeah.
And then the other really important piece around this though, and so I'll connect that to the book because this is step two of my vault method where I bring couples to go through this robust list that I'll even admit when I got married in 2012, I didn't have this list.
Yeah.
I wish I had this list. Yeah. My husband, who reads all my books, he read this one and he goes, woo.
Is your husband a therapist? Did I make that
no.
up? Okay, sorry. Yeah, I know he helps you with, he's so great with all of your reels and stuff. I love
it. Oh my goodness. He's the main character in my reels.
Yeah.
People just need to see the other side of it. But he's not a therapist. Yeah. We met when I was starting my PhD. And so he's kind of traveled along with me. And I think because of that, he's learned a bit more about attachment styles and relationships. But you know, hey, also too, when we had our kid, he didn't know what boundaries really meant. And I was using the word boundaries.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I don't know what you mean.
Yeah.
So it's tricky though, because if we could all just go through these kind of expectations ahead of time, then we would be able to get on the same page. And I always say, when you're communicating your desires and wishes to other people, expect them to be upset when they don't match what they wanted.
And that doesn't mean that anyone's doing anything wrong. Like we are, like that is the nuance that I think is missing from so much of this, is it's like, people are allowed to set boundaries. Everyone's allowed to be upset about it. And you're also allowed to set boundaries. And, you know, you're allowed to say what's hurtful about it. Like we can all talk about this. And that is like the huge issue with when people say they're setting boundaries and they're just setting rules.
Since we are knee-deep in November, i.e. holiday shopping season, I am going to give you the cheat code to the best gift that you could give to anybody in your life. And these are the Cozy Earth Bamboo Sheet Sets or the Cozy Earth Bamboo Pajamas. When I tell you these things collectively have given me the most comfortable sleep of my life, I am speaking to you with my whole chest. The material is like nothing I've ever felt in my life. It is a viscose bamboo and it is so uniquely soft and it has kept me insanely warm yet cool at the same time. I've sometimes struggled with getting really hot at night, and these sheets and these pajamas have made all the difference in the world to that. And also because of how comfy they are, they have made these cold fall mornings incredible. I cannot recommend them enough. And when you're thinking of giving somebody a gift and you're wanting them to have a gift that they are going to use every day, day in and day out, sheets are phenomenal. They also have a 100-night sleep trial. So you can try them out. If you don't love them, you can return them hassle-free. However, on night two, you're going to realize you don't even have to do that. And they also have a 10-year warranty. That is how good this product is. You are going to have these sheets for a decade. Sheets for a decade. Nobody else is promising that. They are incredible. These are top-notch. And since Black Friday is right around the corner, you can now stack my code NUANCE. That's code NUANCE, N-U-A-N-C-E, giving you 40% off total your entire purchase. Use code NUANCE at checkout to get 40% off your entire purchase and thank me later. Wrap the ones you love in luxury with Cozy Earth.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims. Sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
I got this email from a grandmother and she couldn't see her newborn granddaughter, for 4 weeks. It was a request from the couple and from her son and daughter-in-law. And so we did some work together around what happened. We did some coaching sessions around it. And it really was initially this focus on, I've been wronged. Mm-hmm. I had this taken away from me. I didn't get to be there in those first 4 weeks. We had to do some of that grief work because what was happening is that grief, unprocessed, kept acting almost like this, like a wedge between her and then this new family. And she was growing resentful of her daughter-in-law. So we did the grief work. And then we talked about, so let's find what's meaningful now. Mm-hmm. Because you always have a choice. You can focus on what you didn't get. And you know where you're going to go if you focus on that. You're going to drive a wedge between you and your daughter-in-law. And you will not then have the relationship you want with your granddaughter. Grandchild, let's say grandchild. I can't remember. But then the other piece is, so then what's meaningful? How do you want to show up now that this boundary has been set, the time has passed.
Yeah.
Now what do you want to do in response to that? And that is powerful. But if you keep focusing on what you didn't get to have, you're going to miss out on moving forward on something really beautiful and meaningful that does not discount your grief. It exists alongside that. And how do you now nurture the bond with your son and your daughter-in-law mm-hmm. and then your grandchild?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that is the case for so many things. It's why families are so complicated. It's why, especially when we don't talk about things, it's so hard to move through them. And it's messy because a lot of families have a culture of we don't talk about things. Do you have any advice for, you know, daughter-in-laws who that is the family culture? And they're like, I am willing to talk about anything. I'm reading the book. I'm trying. And the family just won't talk about things.
And I think the acceptance of our generation is really about saying, I accept that you're in that season of your life, someone else, right? Yep. This family, that they have a system that works for a family system that works for them intentionally, and you don't get to change it. You can come in and you can keep pointing out and say, you never talk about this. Why are you all sweeping this under the rug, right? You come in almost like, you know, torches are lit, like, we're changing this. And I'm like, you know, I get it. I totally get it. It's frustrating. It's painful. It's painful because you are doing it different. You're doing it differently with your family now, your chosen family, and you see how it could feel better. Mm-hmm. You don't get to change them. You can invite them and say, you know, a comment, for example, would be if they comment on your parenting choices, you might the first time say, you know, parenting does look different today. Would you like to have this conversation about how we're trying to do this in a different way? So you invite them in, you be curious with them and show them the way. But if families continue to say, absolutely not, that's not how you do it. We didn't do it that way. I don't know why you're fussing about sleep so much.
Yeah.
You know, you just put the baby down to sleep and you walk away, all the things, right? So then you say to yourself, okay, this is not that situation. And this is why this book is so needed then, because the piece here is how do my husband, my partner and I turn to each other to be that solid team? And that's where the vault method really came to life, because I thought of what's the structure that is so secure and solid? You need the code to get into it, right? That's what we want marriages to be. And whether you have kids or not, really, when you're in a healthy relationship, we know that you do better on all of the outcomes, on loneliness, on physical health, on mental health, emotional wellness. That matters in your home first.
I love that you're talking about this as like curiosity and an invitation. I think that is so refreshing and such a great way to frame it, because I do think sometimes things get really lost in the shuffle when someone comes into the family and they are like, I'm going to change it. My boundary is that I talk about things, which you and I both know is not a boundary. That's just like an expectation and a rule you're trying to enforce on other people. So I love that you frame that, because I think the word boundary has been twisted and misconstrued and people don't even know what it is anymore. And it's such like, this is what I'm always trying to say is like, I'm not against the actual concepts of therapy. They're extremely important. I'm a therapist. I have a therapy practice. It is when it is like, I kind of explain it as it's like boundaries have become this, talking about it has become this giant game of telephone on the internet. And it's now been through the telephone a million times. And we have ended up with this definition of what a boundary is that is not what it actually is. And then, of course, it's this horrible self-fulfilling cycle, because then people who already are not maybe super into boundaries because it's not how they grew up, it's so easy to then just write off the whole thing and then just say, well, you know, this is ridiculous. Yeah, my daughter-in-law came to me and she, you know, it's ridiculous. I'm not interested in this. I don't want to have a conversation with this, because they don't think about curiosity and invitations and how the goal of boundaries is to be connected to someone.
Let's do a really concrete example for listeners. So let's first define it. A boundary is something, and you add to it, Amanda, let me know what I'm missing in the definition. But a boundary is what I am or I'm not willing to do. It's about me, and it requires me to communicate and then to also take follow-up action.
Yep.
Which is different from a request. A request is, and that's often where we get stuck, that's outward, and it asks something of the other person, yeah? Okay, so let's think of an example. You say to your in-law or your family, I don't want to talk about politics at the table. Or you say to them, let's do it this way, please don't talk about politics at the table. So that's the request. Please don't talk about politics at the table. But then you get so frustrated because every Thanksgiving, holiday, Christmas, Politics are brought up at the table. And now you have baby and two-year-old at the table, and it's getting heated. Everyone feels their nervous systems going offline, and you get angry because you say, you can't ever respect my boundary. So what is missing there first is you're making a request when you say to them, please don't talk about politics. Mm-hmm. And maybe we even switch it to the mother-in-law position too. We'll like play both sides.
Yeah.
But instead, you say to yourself, I'm not willing to engage in politics.
Yes.
And so when that conversation comes up, you rise from the table. You say, okay, kids, why don't we go out for a walk? All right, we'll be back in 10 minutes. And you go for a walk. Right there, that's your boundary. I'm not willing to engage in this. In a family that feels safe to hear you, you might say, hey, all, politics is not for me. I'm going to bow out of this conversation. You get up, you go to the bathroom, you like vent to your group bestie text. We all have it. Splash water in your face and you come back and maybe the conversation has moved on.
Totally. I think that's such a good concrete example. Like I always give the metaphor of like a physical metaphor of boundaries are like, you know, the fence around your property and you can decide what happens inside your property, but someone can walk by and you cannot get mad at them for being on your sidewalk or cutting someone else's grass or doing other things. You cannot go micromanage what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Or even knocking on your door.
Yeah. Yeah.
People can knock on your door.
Yes.
And what are you going to do next?
Yes, exactly. And that's where, yeah, I think that's such a good example because I think a lot of people are in that of I've set boundaries. No one respects my boundaries. And boundaries aren't about controlling someone else. They're about your response and what you're going to do.
From the mother-in-law perspective, you know, I think of how we can receive them and even her own set of boundaries, which is kind of interesting, but how do we even receive them? And I think it's so important that people not personalize it. And like that's even in friendships and romantic relationships. You know, I think of even my husband this morning. We are on officially day three of intense book launch stuff. Actually, that's a lie. It's been like crazy 7 weeks, but truly the book came out. It's intense. And I find myself just going inward and it's what I do. So yeah. I go to him, I say, hey, listen, I'm just in my head. I need space. It's not about you right now. I know I walked by you in the hall and you're probably feeling a cold shoulder from me, but it's not you. I'm just in this zone right now. And he goes, thank you so much for letting me know. Like that is really, he's like, I know, I see you. And also it's helpful to remind myself of that it's not personal. And that's where I think so many family members really miss this. It's that I think of another example, someone else had said that their mother-in-law was upset when they started to like assert these boundaries and get up from the table and go to the bathroom. And at the same time, okay, so then let's play that out. So you're going to force yourself to sit at the table when these conversations about bodies, politics, fertility, parenting, sleep choices, work choices, you have to sit there and tolerate that? Oh, I mean, no, right? So it's okay if your mother-in-law is upset that you're doing something different. And that, Amanda, I think is where oftentimes daughters-in-law also get into this victim or villain position. Mm. If I sit at the table and stay and be the good girl and please and perform, I am the victim in my world, and that does not feel good. If I set boundaries, then I'm made to be the villain. And that's really what my method is all about, is I envision this almost you coming to the table, your mother-in-law is sitting there, your husband's sitting there, you have a seat beside him. You know that you two are a solid team, and now you've got your main character energy. I just love that, by the way. Like your main character energy. Yeah. You're your own showgirl.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I love that. Can you walk us through the vault method and what that looks like specifically?
Yes. And I intentionally created these steps for people to follow so that it is not we're going to create defensiveness right away with your partner, especially. So you can do the vault method on your own or you do it with your partner. My husband actually said too recently, he's like, I think this applies to small businesses or people who are like in collaboration together. So the other thing too, the beginning of the book, the kind of more insight pieces is helping you identify your daughter-in-law style and also your mother-in-law type. And the type it's so important to recognize this piece, is that it's not a diagnosis of your mother-in-law. I love the six types, but I want people to know that we're not going and diagnosing your mother-in-law, because it's not going to help. But instead, when you move through these five steps, you'll then know what's the best way to respond to her, given who she is and her patterns of behavior. So the first step is values. And when couples can really ground themselves in values, this is not goals. It's values. What really matters to us? What do we envision for life? And this is also, again, moving away from morality and more into what's important to you. The A stands for aspirations. And this is where I would work with couples, and they would come in saying, we have the same values. We both really prioritize family, but they couldn't go from 35,000 feet in the air onto the ground level. What does it actually look like to act out these values? And that's where that list comes out, where you can then talk about what really matters. I had a mama-to-be send me a DM saying, went through the list, so helpful. Like, we just needed to go through those questions together. So really helping you in there. The other piece that I add into the second step is around our nervous systems, mm-hmm. because the reality is that if you're both on fight or flight constantly, you go on autopilot, you can't address any of these things. So we've got to find a way to get regulated. The third step is understanding your triangle. I love this step as an awareness and insight and doing something different step, because you need to understand that nobody's in the middle.
Yes.
But that each relationship is weakened. And so people who are listening, I'm like, you know, drawing a triangle, right? So there's, you know, the title, you, your husband, and his mother. There's like all three points in that dynamic. And we have to understand that if your husband goes to his mom, here's one example, and talks and says, and sometimes there's such, you know, insignificant comments, but they have a lot of weight. Oh, hey, mom, Amanda's still breastfeeding. So no, you can't give baby a bottle right now. Hey, mom, Amanda doesn't want to come for Thanksgiving this year. That approach weakens your relationship altogether. So we go through that in the you step. And then the step four is limits and boundaries. Mm-hmm. This is your robust boundary chapter. I don't know if you saw in it, it has three key pieces that couples need to have unity to actually set those boundaries. So that is, you have to both see the importance of this boundary. You both have to be willing to do this work, and then you both have to have the ability to do it, because there are so many people, again, who just don't know how to do it. It's a skill, right? And then the last step is take action. Here, you're going to really identify what's the thing we're addressing, and what does this look like now in the holidays, in the next birthday party, in the next pregnancy announcement, or the next time mom knocks on the door on Sunday afternoon. You're really going to identify what you do in those steps. So I also have this, sorry, I've just rambled on so much.
No, please.
I just, one last piece. I have this last section in the book, because I know what the struggle is for so many people. It's that their partner then says, I don't see why we need to do this work.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as you were saying that.
And it's such a real experience. And it's one of the biggest challenges. And it's where a lot of my work comes from, where I really work with women because their partners aren't willing to do this work. And I've written this last section. I almost envisioned it like a perforated tear out section that you pass to your partner, or you leave it open on the counter.
Yes.
And it's almost like, it's like your note from Dr. Tracy. Dr. Tracy says, and one of those five things I leave for husbands is, when you do nothing, you are part of the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is so hard, because there are dynamics where we're talking about, you know, the husband in this situation, but it could be another dynamic, is the one that isn't willing to participate. And I think that's what's so tough about in-laws, is you really can't do it without them. So you are like stuck. I mean, even I think about my own relationship with my in-laws, and there have been things, and, you know, thankfully I'm a therapist, so I have the wherewithal to kind of be like, I know that I can't say this. I know this isn't helpful without his participation, and he kind of has to go first. But it is so frustrating being on the opposite end of that and having a partner who is kind of like, they just don't feel like it's an issue.
And let's really sink into how real that is for so many men. Yeah. And my husband and I were talking about this recently, and he had said, so him just being kind of this average person, not a therapist, he said, I think men really get rooted into the family system, yeah. whereas women go and build their own family system. Mm. And that, I think, is something that we're trying to really shift. And so it requires us as partners to then go to our husband with curiosity. Because if you go to them, and this is part of chapter 4, the couple's communication piece, but if you go to them and say, oh, your mother's guilt tripping us again, gosh, she always does this, immediately your husband is going to put up the defensiveness and he won't be able to hear you because he is still living in that family system. And what do we all do if someone comes and attacks our parents, no matter, you know, how hurtful our parents? We defend, absolutely. We protect, we put the wall up. And so I think that that is this kind of delicate walk in this dynamic, because they have this unconsciousness around, I think we all have this until we bring awareness to it. How do I keep mom happy? Mm. How do I not have to deal with the wrath that she brings in? Because I remember experiencing that day in and day out. And so I encourage couples, have lots of compassion for each other. But then also, it's not going to be perfect moving forward, but you have to keep trying those small efforts frequently.
Yeah.
And my husband talks about this a lot, and I really appreciate his wholeheartedness of sharing this, that it's about getting uncomfortable and allowing, because he's worked through this in a lot, even if just our own dynamic, where he says, I sometimes don't come to you, Tracy, with things because I'm trying to control the outcome.
Yes.
He wants to make sure I'm not upset. And I'm here saying, come to me, talk to me, I'm ready, I'm waiting, you know? And then when he doesn't, I feel the distance, and then I'm pursuing, it's the anxious pursuit. And it's been so good then also to relaying that to people who are struggling in family dynamics, to then say, you don't get to control the outcome. And that is so uncomfortable, and it's so hard. And you can wish for your parent to say, oh, thank you, sweetie. I'm so glad you're telling me that you're not coming to Thanksgiving dinner, even though we've done this for 30 straight years and now you're not doing it. I'm happy you're telling me this boundary, yep. right? Like, I mean, they just don't. And so we then can go to that conversation preparing for the discomfort,
yeah.
and also trusting. And I think this is where families miss it on both sides. You as an adult child, you maybe don't have trust that your parent is going to hear you. At the same time, adults, so parents, need to trust that they can come to their kids. And it's messy because we don't know how to do that.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, especially I think that is like the shift that happens. And that is what's so tricky about family relationships, is sometimes we let people treat us in a way that if they were not our parent, we would never allow that. And our parents wouldn't want other people to treat us the way that they're maybe treating us.
If someone's listening today and their husband has been in that position, so what I often hear is the dismissing or yes. the denying. They'll say things like, oh, you know, Tracy, it's not a big deal. Tracy, you're being too sensitive. Oh, Tracy, it's just my mom. Come on. It's not, you're making a mountain out of a molehill, yep. kind of thing. And I think then for people who are listening, I really want you to know that it is important to move forward mm-hmm. in these conversations. It is important to have them. And that the biggest thing we can ask our partners is for validation.
Yeah.
Can you come and validate me? Can you come and just see that this is a really hard experience for me, just as a starting place?
I love that. One other thing I wanted to ask you is, what do you think about the fact that, or what is the connection, I would say, I guess, between the work you see and the concept that we know very well, that the whole adage of like daughters stay, sons leave?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Hey, I have a son and a daughter, and I prepare for both of them to leave in whatever form that looks like. I would hope that this generation right now, that we have sons,
yeah.
that we recognize that we do not need to do this anxious pursuit of mm-hmm. our children to keep connected, that your bond is not built on one holiday event, but instead a series of small points of connection, and that as a mother, you can let your child know what your desires are. And I had this conversation with someone else who is a grandmother and a mother-in-law, and it is about being able to say, can I come and be part of this? Can we create this tradition? Can we find something that's ours and special? Because I worry sometimes that as we are parents right now, we're pulling back too much. Mm. We want our children to guide too much,
yeah,
instead of then still saying, and this is the piece with parents that I remind them today, is it's relational. So my son comes in from school and he's like, Mom, let's go for a bike ride. And I'm, you know, hands deep in getting dinner ready. That's not true. My husband gets dinner ready. But anyways, the analogy holds, right? So then I say to him, hey, bud, I would love to. I have to get this done first. And then can we have that time? Because that's the relational piece of I have needs too.
Yeah.
And I'm responsible to meet yours. So son's leaving. Yes. And because the generational kind of lineage that we're seeing is that women have been taught to be the kinkeepers.
Yeah.
And so she gathers and she stays close and she's going to stay close to people she feels safe with. And that is where the mother-in-law can step in and say, how do I help her feel safe? Well, when new baby comes along, I don't only give attention to the baby. I'm checking in on mom. I am interested in who she is as a person. I turn people towards each other. I wrote an article with Parade about emotionally intelligent mothers-in-law.
Yeah.
And it is this, like, I'm going to tell my son to go and turn towards their partner and that I will be here and I don't take things personal and I still express the things I desire and knowing that they can't always meet all of that. And that, I think, is about building the trust, the respect, and the care for your family, not just for your son, but for now his whole family. And I think that's why it's different for daughters, because they are well-versed and well-practiced saying to their mom, well, I don't know if you've reached this part yet, but my daughter, she was much younger than my son when she first did it, slammed her door and said, I hate you. Wasn't ready for it at five. Yeah. I thought it would come at like 13, maybe 10, but it came at five. And my son, it came later. And I thought, yeah, you are going to be so well practiced telling me how you feel and what you need. But then when you find a partner and have a mother-in-law, you don't have that practice. And it is about relational building at that point.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I think it feels like, Tracy, you're so good at just always bringing in like the other side of it, of like, you know, I fall into with my 2.5-year-old, you know, especially when you have a very vocal, angry, feels like 2.5-year-old. When I'm cooking dinner and my daughter's like, I want a cheese stick, you know, it's like a visceral response. Oh my God. Okay. Like my hands are up and I'm trying to get it as quick as I can. And I have to like regulate myself and be like, okay, give me one moment. We need to learn patience. So I think that's just so good of always bringing in that the other side of they have needs and you have needs. They can set boundaries and you have boundaries. They need validation and you need validation. It all needs to be relational and reciprocal. And where we get into trouble, I think, is like the thesis of this whole conversation is that when we only do things from a one-sided place of I'm going to do this, I'm going to make the change in the family, I'm going to fix this. And the same can happen with the mother-in-law too, of I'm going to keep this the same because we're not collaborating with each other.
And families evolve and change. And I think a beautiful offering is to remember that everybody is doing this for the first time. And you are a new daughter-in-law for the first time. You're a new mother for the first time. She's a new grandmother for the first time. And it requires honest, wholehearted conversations where we always see the good in the other person first, because everybody needs that. We give them the generous interpretation. I know you've been so excited to be grandma. And also too, when you come over and only hold the baby, I feel completely unseen and I need you to support me in XYZ. Or even ahead of time saying, I know you're so excited to see grandbaby. Can you please bring the dish for lunch? We can do that.
Yeah, I love that acknowledgement. I think that's missing so much in these conversations. And when you come in on your high horse, sort of being like, this isn't going to happen, there isn't that understanding of like a lot of this sometimes is misconstrued, wanting to be close to someone, wanting to be connected to someone. And if we can acknowledge it, it can break down so many walls and really lead us closer to hearing the other person.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this was such an awesome conversation, Tracy. I know your book, You, Your Husband, and His Mother is out. Tell us all of the other things. How can we find you? Where can we get the book? I'll obviously have links in the show notes.
Amazing. Thank you. You can find it anywhere books are sold. It's available in all formats. I am encouraging people to get the hard copy. Put it on your nightstand so your partner can see it. And if you dare, leave it on the coffee table or the bookshelf, and then it can start a conversation with your extended family to say, yes, we're reading this because family is so important to us and you, mother-in-law, matter to us. And this is how we get to all do this together. It's a great conversation starter. Or text it to your besties because everybody has a story. And you can also find me. So all the links are also, if you're looking for more support, drtracyd.com. Or my favorite part is for listeners to come over to social at Dr. Tracy D. Say hello and let me know what you needed to hear in this conversation between me and Amanda. Amanda, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming.
Think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims. Sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.